The voices of pro-union activists in Wisconsin's capital, Madison, this week. The legislature there is a step closer to approving a bill that could end the right of public sector unions to bargain collectively. And Governor Scott Walker, a Republican who faces a $3.6 billion budget shortfall over the next 2 years, insists that the unions are being greedy.
They know the power of collective bargaining forces local governments not to be able to make those sorts of reasonable decisions to protect jobs.
A similar crisis has hit Ohio, and in New Jersey, Governor Chris Christie has also gone after public sector unions, portraying them as a drain on the state coffers. So is this a turning point in the long and contentious battle between unions and cost cutters? I asked Philip Dre that question. He wrote a book on the history of organized labor in America, and he says the story begins in the early days of the Industrial Revolution with textile workers, mainly women, in the mills of New England.
They set up a system that was very paternalistic of boarding houses with kind of den mothers to look after these young women. But within a generation, these same women began to tire of the 12 and 14 hour days, the low pay, the dust flying in the air. They didn't have the term strike then, but they would what they called turn out. They would just walk out of the factory. And so they weren't organized into unions per se, but it was really this kind of organic process. And I think you see that all over the world, really. Whenever workers are put upon too much, they begin to organize collectively.
For decades, certainly well into the 20th century. In many states, it was not, you weren't protected. You didn't necessarily have the right to organize.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting in a way because until 1842, unions were actually criminal. They were considered a criminal conspiracy. And so, of course, that greatly inhibited organizing. It wasn't until court case in Massachusetts, Commonwealth v. Hunt, that unions were more or less granted the same rights as commercial enterprises to organize. But, you know, most of the time, labor has been fighting for its life. The military has been used against it, police, spies, the courts, definitely. And now you see, of course, in Wisconsin, this kind of legislative subterfuge. So it's always been one thing or another, and labor has basically everything it's won, it's had to really, gain for itself.
Governor Walker in Wisconsin and Governor Christie in New Jersey have talked about these unfunded pension obligations to public employees, mm-hmm. In some cases exceeding hundreds of millions of dollars. And the argument they make is that it's unfair that people in the private sector are not expecting lifetime pensions, and it's got to change in the public sector as well. That argument seems to be resonating with a lot of people.
Yeah, no, I can understand why it does. Of course, in a certain way, it's a little duplicitous because bear in mind that a lot of these agreements were hammered out years ago. And the idea being that, say, in the late 1970s or whenever you went to a teacher's union and said, well, if you'll, the state or whoever would say, well, if we understand you're working for a sort of modest wage and under harsh conditions now, but we'll promise you something down the road. And of course, it was a sort of a bargaining chip. And then to come along 30 or 40 years later and say, whoa, you're greedy to demand that, in a way is not really fair ball. I mean, those were the terms of negotiation, and that was kind of the trade-off.
Are you surprised that some of these governors and politicians have been successful at kind of turning public sector employees who are part of unions into kind of an enemy? I saw a reference to the new welfare queens, which, of course, was a term that was used in the 1980s.
I saw another term the other day, Cadillac benefits, which, of course, invokes President Reagan's thing about the welfare queens driving Cadillacs. I'm not surprised. There's always, I think, a sense that people are suspicious of some sort of organization or collective that has secured something that other people don't have and seem to be operating on their own agenda for their own good, et cetera.
Do you think what is happening now in places like Wisconsin and Ohio, is kind of the death knell for these public sector unions?
I guess in a way the jury is still out on that a little bit. I mean, in one way I would be inclined to say that if this legislation had just breezed through. But I think everyone has been very heartened by the response. I think a lot of union activists and members around the country are probably cheered by it.
That's Philip Dre. He's the author of the book, There is Power in a Union, the epic story of labor in America. Philip Dre, thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.